Welcome back to Thrones Talk.
Yes.
I'm here with Mindy.
Hello and welcome. Obviously, we're going to be talking about Thrones.
Yeah, so as we approach the season premiere of Game of Thrones this Sunday, April 14th, for this next and last season, eighth season, we're doing some recapping. Mindy picked the episodes, so we're going to talk through some pretty major spoilers, just letting you know up top what to expect.
It's true. It's true. I will say this, that I was late coming into Game of Thrones. Also, you were too, Darren, right?
True. Yeah, statement. I was the last person. I am officially the last person to have gotten into the show.
The last person on the helicopter out of there. And I will say that I did really, really well to not have anything spoiled for me, except that Obama actually spoiled one of the episodes we're going to be talking about. And I was like, what? And
presidential spoilers.
I mean, I went years without having anything spoiled. Anytime I would see it on Gawker or anything, I just wouldn't look at it. It's really hard to not have it spoiled for you. And then Obama.
It sounds like you had the expectation that you were going to see it and you were just putting it off.
Exactly.
Is that the case?
Yeah, because yeah. I didn't want it to. I mean, anytime something would come up about it, I'd be like, nope, no thank you. I don't want to be ruined.
Okay, so similarly, I don't generally favor swords and sorcery. I like the Lord of the Rings. I don't love them. I'm familiar, but, you know, I didn't watch any of the Hobbit films.
Really?
I like science fiction for whatever reason. If you kind of humor my pretentious science leaning, you know, once, I can let a writer get away with murder versus a world of wizards and sorcery where they find the deus ex machina is magic. That shit frustrates me. Oh. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It's not a big difference, but it is one of the reasons I get frustrated with fantasy and I do lean towards science fiction. That said, I was pleasantly surprised by how little magic factors into the show.
Yeah. I mean, it's more now towards the end of the show. The beginning is more just fighting and politics.
Yeah, I wish it had been made clear to me earlier that the way my friend Sean described it, this is a world where magic is coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, there was an age of dragons and giants and monsters and folklore, and we are only just now returning to those times. And so, I don't know, for whatever reason, I like that a lot more. But yeah, so I have watched everything. I am up to date. I've done a fair share of reading, but not enough to spoil things for myself.
Good.
I guess I wasn't following Twitter the day Obama spoiled. Do you remember what plot point he spoiled?
Yes, it was the episode The Door. He spoiled the entire Hodor thing for me. And I was like, what was that, Obama? What was that? And I was very mad. Because, I mean, years, and it's really hard. You know how, like, I went almost my whole life without seeing Star Wars. Like, it's actually really difficult to do these things. And when I put my mind to it, I can do it. But he had released a video, and I was, of course, going to watch it because I wanted to see what he was talking about. And there he goes, ruining
my
day.
Thanks a lot, Obama.
Thanks, Obama.
So we're going to be starting out with The Lion and the Rose, and/or called The Purple Wedding.
Yes.
Which I like that.
The Purple Wedding, you enjoy that?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, sure.
So it's the second episode of the fourth season. It was written by the man himself, George R.R. Martin, and directed by Alex Grave, who, man after my own heart, has directed a lot of TV, including 34 episodes of The West Wing.
Yes.
Fringe, Terra Nova. Just kidding. I don't know what Terra Nova is.
I've never heard of that. I don't know what that is.
Spielberg science fiction thing, but yeah, anyway. So the most hateable character, Joffrey Baratheon, finally gets his.
Yes. And it's awesome. So I chose these because each one I think provides, like, this this series, kind of like The Walking Dead, gets to the point where it's just bad guys win all the time. And yeah. especially in the United States right now, bad guys win all the time. And I'm sick of seeing that shit. So I chose this one because a bad guy finally got what was coming to him. And that's why I chose this one. This one also is the last one written by George R.R. Martin. So okay. this is the last time he was actually writing on the show. And to me, it's just really good. Something bad finally happens to a bad guy. And it's violent. And it's brutal.
Yeah. George Martin has a knack for writing hateable characters
yes.
that you are on board for. I mean, you might even come around in the case of Cersei. But
What? No. You don't come around to liking her.
I mean,
her.
It ebbs and flows.
maybe you're a psychopath. It does. I could see like Jamie. You kind of hate Jamie, but then you kind of like him.
After her walk of shame, I kind of wanted to see a little bit, you know, the scales balance back out. But okay, so we're kind of jumping into it. So Joffrey, the bastard son of the incestuous hedonists and the sadist of King's Landing, he's getting married to Marjorie,
yeah.
who is a political operator. She's learned very young how to manipulate, and it's not like she's not a Cersei. She's not in it for herself necessarily. She's kind of in a Princess Diana role. Where
yeah.
she wants to like do good by the public, the local peasants. But yeah.
Yeah, she's always though been the entire her life she's been like essentially groomed to become the queen. That's kind of the idea there. And then the flower people have their own thing because the flower people are all about money and that's how they politically work. And so I think everyone has like specific rules. It's similar to The Wire, where everyone has very specific rules they have to follow. And when you stop following those rules,
a man got to have a code.
That's when you get into a little bit of bad shit happens to your character or whatever. But she knows how to play the game. She knows how to push Cersei's buttons just enough in a way that Cersei can't call her out. And I love that. That's like my favorite thing ever.
Yeah, she has Joffrey wrapped around her finger. And yeah, the Tyrells are in a rare position of power around the Lannisters because the Lannisters owe fucking everybody money. The Lannisters are like that uncle that, you know, frustrate your parents for showing up and borrowing more money.
But and the whole thing is, like, their whole slogan is, you know, we always repay our debts. And it's like, well, but if you were the flower people, you wouldn't have any debts. So burn.
Right. Yeah, that's it. It's propaganda. That line is like clearly been seeded a long time ago when they owed a shit ton of money. And
they just keep yeah. doing it. Yeah.
Right. The subtext of that is the Lannisters always owe people money.
Exactly. When you take it apart, that's purely what it is that we always repay our debt, but we're always in debt.
You promise me a lordship and a castle and a highborn beauty for a wife.
And you'll get all three. A Lannister always
Don't
pays...
say it. Don't fucking say it.
Yeah, when they show up to the Iron Bank, it's like Norm and Cheers.
Norm! This episode is one, too, where we start to really see why Ramsay is such a piece of crap because
yeah,
essentially you just think he's a monster that exists only to be a monster. I think up until this point, we never really see his dad with him and we don't see how they interact. And here's the first time when we see how his dad, who's the guy who was at the Red Wedding, how his dad interacts with Ramsay and why Ramsay is such a fuck up. And it's brutal. And you almost feel bad, I think, at points for Ramsay, the way that his father treats him.
If you acquire a reputation as a mad dog, you'll be treated as a mad dog. Taken out back and slaughtered for pig feed.
Yeah, but in that same way that, like, you kind of snapped at the idea of anybody liking Cersei, I snap at that because the Boltons, and Ramsay in particular, he's, like, very clearly awful very early, and I think we've already talked about Joffrey that like Ramsay is like the grown up version of Joffrey. Like that is where he is headed. He will be hunting human beings.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. But I think like in the same way that Margaery was groomed to be good, Ramsay was groomed to be bad. I mean, when your house, in the same way that, you know, the Lannisters have the slogan about the debt, the banner for Ramsay, for the Boltons, is a flayed man. Like, you know nothing good's coming out of that. That's your banner.
Yeah, I wrote that in my notes.
I like to skin people. Wee.
The Bolton's flag is the flayed man.
That, like, don't do business with those people. Those are bad people.
How did
those
they are last clearly, this long?
They're advertising it.
Exactly. So it's kind of like you kind of expect this is what's going to happen.
Yeah. And that he's also, so as far as like, you know, these parallels, he's also a Snow, which is to say he's a bastard. And so like on one side, you've got Jon Snow, who I think different than Ramsay, like Jon Snow was raised. Mm-hmm. He was raised around brothers and sisters. He, you know, there was mentoring there. Whereas Ramsay was housed.
Yes.
Like, that's a Dana Gould joke. Like, I wasn't raised, I was housed.
Yeah, and seemingly housed with the dogs that he keeps, that eat people.
Ugh, him and those goddamn dogs.
So, but I do like that kind of peek around what made him kind of be how he is, you know, and at this point in the series, he's housing Theon, who he's already castrated, and that's a goddamn mess. And now they're calling him Reek, and that's just like, this is probably the peak height of everyone hating Ramsay. And then they introduce this sort of relationship with his dad, and I think that's really an interesting way to be like, well, he's like this because.
Right. He's Uday Hussein. He's Eric and Donald Jr. He's
I don't want to feel bad for them, though.
But so, yeah, so he has broken Theon, another character who is just like terrifically hateable. Mm-hmm. Oh, up to God. This point.
I hate him like pretty much all the time.
Yeah. And that said, when he is broken as a human being and denied his humanity and renamed Reek, like you do, like sympathy starts to creep up a mm-hmm. little bit. So yeah, I don't know. Again, it's a duel of people you don't like. It's a duel of who you hate more. I don't know. It made me uneasy because I kind of got the feeling that he was going to be around for a while.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's how much I hate him.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So this all is kind of happening right next to each other, not geographically, but in time, right next to each other. Then we have Bran, who, I'm sorry, I get very tired of Bran.
I think of his stories as like boring side quests in video games.
Yes.
Like the Bran story, it's only here in the fourth season that it starts to pick up a little bit and have some direction. But damn, man, like if it was, I mean, there are episodes where you forget he exists.
Yes, and
I'm care.
Just fine with that.
Yeah. And so they're hanging out north of the wall. He's been, you know, sort of called by the greater siren song of the three-eyed crow, or is that, am I calling it the right thing?
Yeah. I mean, at this point in time, though, he's also kind of like, he keeps like jumping bodies into the wolf. And then they're like, don't War do game. That because, you know, then you'll be a wolf forever. And it's kind of like, well, is that so bad? I don't know.
He's fine tuning his warging, which, I mean, I feel silly saying that out loud.
You
it's
should.
A funny
it's
name
stupid.
To give to something.
Yeah, it's dumb.
But yeah, so he's looking through summer, his dire wolf, and getting good at hunting, I guess, in that mode. But in any case, he gets the like whisper message that everybody else sends ravens to deliver messages, but he just gets a voice in the ether telling him to
look for me.
Beneath the tree. He saw us!
Hello! North!
apparently Yoda's reaching out to him.
Perfect.
Backwards.
Great. Thanks for that.
But at least now he has a purpose. He's got a direction. He's their human compass. Lead them away, Bran, farther even from the wall.
Yeah. The Bran stuff I get really sick of really quickly, and I don't understand when people are like, that's my favorite character. And then I go, okay.
No, maybe from the books. My understanding is that, yeah, he has a little more character in the books. And also, I think in the books, his siblings can also warg.
Oh.
I think that's right. My friend was telling me that in the books, they kind of emphasize the direwolves a lot more, especially their connection to the Starks. We just don't get that so much in the show.
Which, I mean, I'm okay with that because... I am with you on the just suddenly being magic for magic's sake. That irritates the shit out of me. And we'll talk about it more when we talk about like Melisandre later in the third episode that we're going to talk about. But the Lord of Light shit gets a little, I don't know, I side-eye some of that stuff.
So at Dragonstone with the Baratheons, Stannis Baratheon's daughter Shireen she's one of the few good, pure things on this show, and never mind that her dad is an inept, you know, dope, and her mother is a religious fanatic, and in between them and this love triangle is the Red Witch. Shireen is sweet. Like, she taught Davos how to read, and that was
and
nice.
And she's smart. Yeah.
And she's, you know, she's been treated for her dragon flesh. What are they?
Grayscale.
So her arc, I mean... Of course, that Melisandre speaks to Shireen about the Lord of Light and how the seven gods are all a lie, because every kid in Westeros shouldn't go through more than 10 years without having their hope broken.
Right.
But yeah, as sexy as the Red Witch is, I wouldn't take her advice.
No, except, well, this is so then, let me talk about it right now, because listen, the Lord of Light, I think people should actually start paying attention because... she does some fancy real world magic later on. Melisandre does.
Almost by accident.
And there's also like some people who are like, you know, appointed by the Lord of Light who cannot die. So it's kind of like maybe this Lord of Light is actually for realsies and we should all take it a little more seriously. I don't understand the Lord of Light doubters because, you know, when the Hound later starts to doubt it, and then eventually is like, oh, I suppose it's all just shining me in the face right now. But, like, how are you doubting it? This man cannot die. I would believe it. If someone is showing me these things, someone's telling me to look in the fire, and I start seeing the future, I'm going to start to believe it.
But I think we're that guy, and the one-eyed guy's name is escaping me. But Flaming Sword guy, the best guy, my favorite guy. he doesn't proselytize. Like he just kind of is this warrior on the road, and him and his, you know, band of merry men just sort of trek around and pick up odd jobs to get fed. But they're not, you know, they're not trying to be recognized as like, you know, Jesus and the Reanimator.
No,
like,
but I think I would start to believe that this was a real thing when it starts to have me see the future.
Yeah. But again, like it's, you know, unless you were there, right? Like you just kind of remain this thing of lore.
Except for Davos, time and time again, is constantly being shown that actually the Lord of the Light is real. And time again, he's like, that's bullshit.
Yeah, I don't know. He's such a pragmatist. I really love the Onion King.
Me too.
And I love that he's called the Onion King.
He's the Onion
or
Knight.
Don't
make him fancier than he is.
Sorry, I'm trailing off. Let's get back to King's Landing, because this is the real fun.
Yes.
Although, so as much as I've grown to hate Joffrey, I couldn't really... It wasn't a satisfying death for me. So, okay, sorry, we're jumping ahead.
Okay.
Okay, so at the wedding... Jamie's feeling self-conscious. Well, I guess going into the wedding, Jamie's feeling self-conscious. He's lost his sword fighting hand. So these days he's Buster Bluthing it with metal claw.
Lucille! Watch out for Lucille!
I don't care about Lucille! Stay alive!
And then a seal bites off his hand.
Tyrion encourages him to train with his left hand and hires for him Bronn.
I love Bronn.
Who... Bronn's the best.
I love Bronn, and then later Bronn's squire, and it's amazing, and it's my favorite thing ever.
Under my patronage, you've become a knight. You've served as commander of the city watch.
Briefly.
Sure you filled your pockets.
And now my pockets are empty. You've given me a taste for the finer things. And if you want me to carry on protecting you, you'll need to pay more.
I thought we were friends.
We are. But I'm a sellsword. I sell my sword. I don't loan it out to friends as a favor.
How much?
Double.
Double?
I'm a knight now. Knights are worth double.
I don't even know how much I'm paying you now.
Which means you can afford it.
Yeah, Bronn, he's a lovable scumbag. What's most important is puts it all on Front Street. Guy is not, he's not little fingering it. Like he's...
I mean, he's pretty honest about what everything is.
Yeah, it's about money, and money with money you can buy women. And that's the end of the story. And otherwise he's good with the sword, and that's all that matters. And so, like, I don't know, that's pretty honest. That's not a person who's going to stab you in the back. He's going to stab you in the front. Okay, so Brienne of Tarth kind of delivered Jaime to King's Landing, and Cersei thinks that she's in love with him, and she's probably right, right? Like, Brienne kind of, she got the feels a little bit. It's not like Romeo and Juliet love. It's kind of like, I'm one of the few people who can see you for the good in you. And I don't know, Brienne's probably not had a lot of relationships based on her backstory.
Yeah. I love her. She's my most favorite character. If I had one favorite character, it's Brienne. She's just, to me, the best character in the whole series.
Yeah, Brienne and Oathkeeper.
So the wedding is starting. Marjorie is doing this like food drive situation with the extra food. And she's like, all the extra food can go to the poor people, which is kind of like rich coming from you, because it's like, here's some scraps. It's just actually kind of rude, but she thinks it's great. The poor people think it's great. Everyone thinks it's great except for Cersei, who just hates poor people. There's no really reason except for she hates Marjorie, you know? And then she says, yeah. No, you can't have that. She wants it all fed to the dogs, which probably Ramsay would have loved to hear were he there.
Yeah, it's kind of this self-fulfilling prophecy in terms of Cersei and the public, right? And it comes back to bite her in the ass, but that idea that she loathes and resents them, and, you know, it pretty much is apparent in terms of her public relations, and she knows that, like, without her power, they would slit her throat and eat her.
Of course.
Like, the public, not big fans.
Well,
probably the Lannisters across the board. No, and there's also, rumors about her incestuous children, and that
they're truths, not just rumors. They're truths.
Fair point.
Let's call that
to get down.
That's
with relatives.
I mean, he's a handsome fella, but he is her brother, right? So at this time too, Tyrion is still there hanging with them at this point in the series, and they hate him because they're dicks. There's no real reason. He's kind of a dick too. Everyone's rude in the Lannister family at this point in time.
Yeah, they're kind of fascists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only people who like each other are the two that are sleeping together. Everyone else hates everybody else.
Home team.
And so Joffrey then, because he's also an asshole, because why not? He makes this play, knowing that Sansa's going to be there, know that Tyrion's going to be there, a play with little people portraying like Ned Stark and everything that happened previously, and Joffrey's reign as king. And it's brutal. That's a brutal little play.
It's humiliating. The War of the Five Kings. And because it does involve dwarves, he eggs on Tyrion to join them and get in there, and it's just fucking publicly humiliating. And it really is the like crescendo, right? It's like he's been a monster this whole time, and now he's being so publicly, and Tyrion gives him the book, and Joffrey rightly cuts it in half, because who gives a book for a wedding present? But still rude. And then in his celebration and the pouring of the wine and whatnot, and he eats some cake, and then he, starts gasping and choking, and it's pretty fucking gross.
Yeah. But it is awesome, and I liked it a great deal. Because it's also, he ate some cake and he drank some wine, so you're like, who got it? Who knows? Where's the poison coming from? But of course, Joffrey, because he can't just die like a good bad guy. He has to point at Tyrion and blame Tyrion, even though he's like, you don't know that. You're just dying.
I loved it. It was like the Simpsons Who Shot Mr. Burns season finale. He points at his uncle. He doesn't know shit.
No, he's just pointing.
Yeah, he's like, my last dying wish is fuck that guy.
And Cersei, because she's just looking for a reason, goes, okay, haul him away. And they do.
Yeah, so at the end of that episode, Tyrion is screwed, locked in a tower, and we're down another king.
The second episode that I chose for us to talk about is The Door, probably one of the saddest episodes, I think, in general.
Yeah,
this is the one in particular that Obama ruined for me. This is from the sixth season. It's the fifth episode of that season, written by, now after George Martin has quit writing for them, this is written by David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, which is the majority of the writing done for the show. It's directed by Jack Bender, who directed a lot of episodes of Lost. He also directed this sad, terrible TV show, Under the Dome.
Oh.
Remember that? Remember that one?
I do remember that. I think we talked about it a little bit on the show.
Did.
At least the...
Because at first I thought it was going to be good. I loved the book, and then it turned terrible. But that's okay, because this episode is great. Thanks, Jack Bender, for making up for it, right? So this, it gets very mystical. So what did you think about this episode? Because it starts to get very time travel, mystical magic.
Yeah, I think once I decided I was in, I was in. You know what? The test episode was the Red Witch assassination of first name, I don't remember last name, Baratheon.
Vagina
monster ghost baby assassin.
That was pretty great.
That was something that a friend of mine had spoiled it and was trying to frame it as honestly as possible. And when it just came down to, okay, she births a smoke ghost that, you know, can get by bars and security and assassinate, you know, that particular king in front of Brienne of Tarth, no less. When I heard that, I was kind of shocked and stunned and thought, like, that's fucking ridiculous.
It does sound ridiculous at face value. It sounds very ridiculous.
And then so we go from there to introducing time-traveling paradoxes like a la Terminator. And like, fuck it, I'm in, let's do it.
Well, at this point in time, you know, you've already done six seasons. How many hours have we spent?
Right, what am I gonna quit?
You can't stop now.
Okay, so at the wall, after all the troubles, tribulations, and nightmarish existence, Sansa Stark confronts Peter Baelish, Littlefinger, about his decision to marry her off to Ramsay Bolton, because that has been a hell on earth. She has been a sexual hostage.
Right.
And little by little over the course of, you know, at this point, six seasons, she's been gaining agency. But for the most part, she's been at the whim of more powerful men and sort of traded off and married to different families.
It takes her a long time to get her shit together.
Yeah. But, you know, it's kind of, it feels like that was more the norm versus the exception of characters like Brienne or Cersei or even Arya. Like, she's, you know, well, she had her own path really early.
I think of Sansa, though, as like a origin story for someone who becomes Cersei later, where she just gets like colder and colder and colder.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. And I mean, Cersei had Tyrell to show as a model, and she certainly grew into his role. But like Sansa, I think that's part of it, that she's just been rudderless. Like, she hasn't had anyone to like tether her.
Mm-hmm.
The closest she's come is being married to Tyrion, who just, you know, had the common decency to leave her alone.
Right, exactly.
But otherwise, she's just been handed off. And so this is the point where she decides to, you know, give Baelish a piece of her mind and starts to fight back. And I like this, the little glimmer of hope and agency in her that, like, she's going to be all right because she is taking care of herself now.
Well, and she also has now acquired Brienne. And so Brienne works for her now. And so now she has muscle behind this kind of thing. And she's also finally starting to get a little bit smarter through certain previous episodes where Arya has kind of helped to make this happen for her and Littlefinger. Littlefinger, I can't help but really enjoy whenever he's on.
I was going to ask you.
I love him.
So played by Aidan Gillen, who is a great actor.
Love him.
And frankly, I've been hating the roles he's played since The Wire when he was Mayor Carsetti. Especially back in The Wire days, I had no idea he was an Irish actor.
See, I knew him from the original Queer as Folk. He was the star of the original Queer as Folk in the UK. And that's how I knew him. And then when he shows up as Carchetti, and I'm like, oh, this guy, he's now got a different accent. His accents are never great. I'm not going to lie. The accents are like kind of fucked up. But I still enjoy it a great deal. Love him as Carchetti. Love him as Littlefinger. Oh, you just love to hate him. As opposed to like Cersei, who I just hate.
Right. Yeah, Littlefinger, I think I liked him. I think as long as the first season, I liked him most of the first season. And then it sunk in that like he is a weasel. He is a conniving sneak.
Yes.
And he is purely out for himself. And that, I mean, it gets driven home over time, but wow, like he is a master manipulator and knows when to like be around and when to get the fuck out of Dodge.
Mm-hmm.
Like the guy is very good at avoiding trouble. So between characters you hate and characters that you feel for and they only get in their own way. So Jorah Mormont.
Yeah.
He's been... Daenerys is... I was about to call him a lapdog. He's not a lapdog. That's unfair. He's the reason she's still alive, but...
He's like her right-hand man.
Yeah, but that he... I mean, he's fallen in love with her in the process, and dude, just... Oh,
but she told him a long time ago, like, this is not going to happen, and Jorah's still like, that's okay. I'd still like to hang out.
Yeah, and so... When he comes home and with Grayscale and reveals it to Daenerys, he gets friend zoned so bad that, like, I will say it was expertly done. Daenerys, you know, has the news broken to her that her right hand man, Jorah, has Grayscale. You know, Grayscale is essentially fatal. And she tells him, you know, why don't you go get cured and then come back and find me and then we'll take over Westeros. How does that sound?
And he's like, okay, even though she at this point in time thinks you're not going to do that. That's okay.
You're not coming
back. It's like she's all yellering him in a nice way though. Like, go away. And he does, because that's what Jorah's like lot in life is to be. He's a servant.
Yeah.
That's what he does. And other likable characters, though. Yara, what? They're doing stuff. The bird crap people. Love those guys. Always covered in bird crap. Yara and Euron. Ooh, I hate him so much.
Yeah. So Yara, the Theon sister, and I can't remember their family's name, but they are the water people. They are the salt water people. Theirs is the Salt Throne, which sounds like the most uncomfortable throne we've addressed so far. We've got one throne melted down of swords.
Well, also, if like you're hanging around water, you're on salt, man. Like you're going to be sitting on the ground soon. Yeah. Doesn't make any sense.
Uncomfortable. Only, you know, only less comfortable than the Lego blocks throne and the fiberglass throne, because that shit'll make you itch. but so yeah, so she has Theon support for King, and that's pretty dope because Theon, for the first time ever, is doing the right thing and not trying to ascend to the throne. And also, I mean, he's kind of being emasculated and rendered down, and so he's fine to just serve in a supporting capacity to his much better sister. And that's when the uncle shows up and starts, well, he takes out their dad in the episode before this.
Yeah, Euron Greyjoy sucks, and I hate him, but I will say he's like the fanciest of the Greyjoys. Everyone else is covered in bird poop, but Euron is all shiny with his black leather pants.
Yeah, he's been at sea this whole time, and I mean, they're making a Game of Thrones prequel show about the building of the wall, but it might be interesting to see like Game of Thrones at sea, like Summer at Sea, like the those dating shows, or what was that, like Real World or. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, Real World. Sure.
So, I mean, when at sea, people go crazy. And Euron is, yeah, I mean, he's like a filthy pirate. He
he is, but he's like less filthy than everyone else. He's like far, far fancier with his fancy like leather things and his little stars embroidered in on his clothes. His clothes are actually pretty freaking awesome.
He doesn't talk fancy.
Even though
fancy.
He has like a haircut from like, I don't know, the late 1990s. I don't care for that. But the rest of it, he's got swagger for days.
You don't see the Caesar cut much anymore.
You really don't.
So because we do have to touch with all the Stark children in Braavos, Arya is kind of working through the steps of becoming a mercenary and working for the many-faced god, and has her like assassin's target, and it's a little bit boring. She has to kill an actress.
I got very bored with this. I don't understand why everyone loves Arya so much.
I stopped liking her later into the show because she kind of, I mean, if this was Star Wars, she would have given in to the dark side.
Oh, yeah, that's what she does. She murders. She wanders around and she murders. And that's fine. There's a place for it, but I don't really care.
Yeah, I think here, this is like the last moral conflict that she has before she goes full rogue. But, with any irony, the story is about her kind of rejecting the orders and not carrying through what she was paid to do. But, yeah, I don't know. She's getting better at killing.
Yes, she was always very good at fake killing, so now she's doing some really good real killing. Yeah. Very nice.
And so over in Meereen, we've got Tyrion and Varys just politicking. Daenerys is playing hooky for a while, and these guys are kind of left to run the city and sort of herald her name, and they employ a red witch, which always seems like a gamble to me.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't know. I like these guys. They might be two of my favorite characters on the show. Varys won me over, and this is going to sound creepy as fuck, but when he revealed his gimp in the box.
Yeah.
When that was like his lifelong arc of getting revenge on, you know, those who would do wrong by him, but like really wrong. And in that moment, like, I don't know, it was creepy, but I thought pretty powerful. And whatever, he seems like one of the few true believers who's like trying to make the world a better place. And so is Tyrion,
I think,
for that
matter. So. I think Tyrion is selfish, I think, at the very beginning. Then later he kind of shapes up. But I think Varys really is the only one who actually cares about the kingdom. And not like the king or queen or whatever, but like actually keeping the shit going.
Yeah. And
he's like the only good person, him and Davos.
Yeah. Yeah. Davos is even less like politically ambitious. But yeah, Varys recognizes in Tyrion that like, hey, he's actually got, you know, human beings in mind when he makes these decisions, and is not like just like a Lannister to be self-serving. They're just hanging out in Meereen while beyond the wall we'll return to Bran Stark, the three-eyed raven, who before I think I called a crow.
I don't know. Who the fuck
there's
knows?
A scientific
it's a boring
difference.
Story.
I don't remember what it is.
Ravens are really big and crows are really smart.
Is that? Okay.
I mean, I'm sure there's more differences than that. That's how I tell them apart. Right. But over there, we learn about the children of the forest and their creepers.
Yeah. Max von Sydow is the three-eyed raven kind of grown into the roots of this tree. It seems, yeah, between the tree and the children and the mysticism, it feels like a Midsummer Night's Dream.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally.
Except it's like pretty dark. And of course, like anything in this universe, like, the even things done with the best intentions are going to have horrible results. And so we do get a flashback to the origin point of the Night King and the sort of the father of the White Walkers.
Right. But like, the children of the forest are the ones to blame because they were like getting essentially pushed back from the men, from the people. So then they were like, well, I'll show you people. And then they make a evil people. Like, now that's no good. No good for anybody. That's really their own fault.
That's the thing with children. They have no foresight.
That's true. So then we get to the point of the entire title, the point of the entire show, The Door. Hodor is with Bran, and the Night King and his army are kind of descending on the Children of the Forest and the Three-Eyed Raven at this point. And there is a battle royale going on out there.
Bran, I guess they kind of explain it as when he's getting these Matrix-style downloads of memories and history, it kind of makes them trackable. Like him and him commuting with Max von Sydow is playing the Three-Eyed Raven, can be found by the Night King, and so they descend upon them, and it's children versus White Walkers, and it's a fucking massacre. And so out of that, Bran is simultaneously downloading a historical story point with a young Hodor who, what's the name? He's like young Hodor.
What you talking about, Will?
Before he was known as Hodor was Willis. And so Bran is in that memory while simultaneously warging Hodor to get him to like carry his, you know, snow sleigh with Bran on top out the door, while the whole time Mira is kind of steering them and guiding them and screaming at them. And so they finally, they get to the back door of the tree. I thought that was kind of funny that a tree yeah, had a door. I mean, it's a big tree. It's got corridors and whatnot under it, but
there's a lot going on in there. As you do as a tree.
So they get through the door, and you've got White Walkers trying to pound through. Hodor's holding the door, and Mira is screaming at him to hold the door, hold the door. And in that flashback, Bran has made eye contact with Willis, the young Hodor, and kind of, what, like, accidentally blends the two worlds and is hearing Mira scream, hold the door, while he
right,
wargs with past Vision Willis / Hodor, and that breaks his brain.
Yes, it does. So kind of like Bran is really a jerk.
Pretty reckless.
And maybe that's why I dislike him so much, because he's just very selfish, character.
Yeah.
But he does. He breaks Hodor's brain, and that's why Hodor is how he is.
Yeah, and hold the door goes to hold the door, hold the door, hold the door. And I cried. I did have it spoiled for me a long time ago. I didn't know exactly how it was going to happen. But when it did, it still broke my heart. It made me really sad. Especially that, like, I don't know, there's a certain kind of tragedy to the idea of a character whose whole identity has led to one single moment. But, like, well, you know what? He seemed to be having a good time most of the time. Hodor was very quick to smile. He was very good-spirited.
He was in happy spirits, but he didn't have to be like that. He could have had a completely different story.
Yeah, he wasn't given a choice.
But there was no other way for that to work out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was that episode. So I have one death that made me happy, one death here that makes me sad, and then we're going to end with Winds of Winter, Season 6, Episode 10.
Yeah.
Written again by David Benioff and D.B. Weiss. Directed this time by Miguel Sapochnik. While watching this season, I was getting so frustrated because the High Sparrow was just the worst bad guy. I mean, and by worst, I mean best bad guy. Master manipulator, terrible, terrible person, super self-righteous. Did like that he put Cersei through her paces. I enjoyed that a great deal. But then he also was being a dick to Loras, which you feel really bad for him. All sorts of things. How did the High Sparrow get to be so freaking powerful?
Yeah, I mean, it's the danger of trusting a religious fanatic. And, I mean, I find cults fascinating. And so when it kind of emerged in Game of Thrones and the whole sort of, like, they essentially take over the city. And it does kind of become this, you know, power of the mob kind of story versus Cersei.
So, yeah, the High Sparrow and this religion has taken over. It drives me insane. This season is one of the best, but also one of the most infuriating. And that's why I love this finale, this really final kind of ending to so much of it. Because that's kind of going on. While this is going on, and we'll come back to it, Arya is going wandering around on a murder spree. Arya.
She's really taken advantage of the methods and approaches of the many-faced god, because we find her with Walter Frey, who back in the day facilitated the Red Wedding and betrayed Robb Stark. And, you know, he's been a creepy, pedophilic old man. It's funny. I love that actor. And he pops up in a bunch of, like, Edgar Wright stuff. But when he, after celebrating with the Lannisters, he's having his dinner alone and he's eating his, you know, shepherd's pie or whatever the fuck, and is curious why his sons are late. And the servant lets him know that he is, in fact, joined by his sons and that he has been eating them this whole time.
And I love it.
Do you like it? Do you like it, Scott? I call it Mr. and Mrs. Tenorman chili.
Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
Nya, 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 nya. I made you eat your parents. Nya, 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 nya. Jesus Christ, dude.
My mom and dad are dead.
And then I go, okay, Arya, that was pretty good. That was pretty cruel. And then she kills him. And then the Freys are done. And that's great, because I was getting sick of them.
Yeah, yeah. We could definitely use some culling of those types. And I think at this point, the Boltons have also been, had their ranks cut down. But, yeah, so Arya's embracing the killer inside. And it's getting dark.
Then, speaking more of murder and death, Sir Davos finally calls out Melisandre about killing Shireen, because that was brutal and freaking awful.
Yeah.
And that was a terrible death, very sad and the worst, probably. Then, to a person who can't die, so everyone else is dying and getting murdered, someone who can't die and just keeps showing up, Benjen Stark. Get out of here, Uncle Benjen. Get out. Like, you think he's dead from the first episode, and then he shows up again later, and then you think he died again, but you just kind of forgot about him, and then he shows up later, and he just keeps showing up.
I like that. It's reliable. Well, no, it's not reliable. That's the wrong way. But it's like a pleasant surprise when he turns out not to be dead.
It's a good thing for John. It's always a good thing for everybody out there, because Benjen just lives outside in the snow. It's just, he just wanders around. He's a man about town north of the wall. So we were talking about the High Sparrow and he kind of taking Cersei down a peg. Well, Cersei now and Loras, the flower guy, they both have to go have a public trial because this is the cool thing that High Sparrow does. And
so self-righteous.
Everyone has now been called in to the dome to witness Cersei essentially groveling, essentially, and like giving herself over to the religion. That's what's going on.
Right, Cersei. So Cersei is, I'm trying to remember the specific thing she's accused of. Is she directly accused of the incestuous stuff?
Yes.
Okay, so that's one thing. So incest is a big no-no, and that's going to be, you know, judged by God. you know, for, among other things. And Loras, you know, God forbid he is a homosexual in Westeros, and that is also very offensive to the High Sparrow. And so Cersei has kind of negotiated her way where she's got a little latitude. Like, she's going to show up, and then the trial is going to commence. Except if you, you know, at this point we know that Cersei loathes these people with, like, the kind of venom that takes years to facilitate. And the last, month or so that she's been in prison? Has it been... I get fuzzy with the timeline.
She's in there. Well, she was in prison for a while, then she gets out. Because, see, what's going on right now is that now the mountain has been made for her, and he's her bodyguard. So Cersei is now being held seemingly by the mountain, but actually he's working for her. So then what happens? Sparrow says, come on, you got a court date of like 10 o'clock or something. And Cersei's like, yeah, cool, I'll be there. Everyone show up. Everyone show up. And everyone does. And then she's like, hey, Mr. Mountain, don't let me out and don't let anyone in. Cool, great. And she just hangs out because what's been going on underneath the entire city is because of previous history with the crazy Targaryen king, he also kind of murdered everybody with wildfire. Well, and then Jaime kills him so that he can't kill everybody. That's why Jaime's a Kingslayer, right? So Cersei's like, I've heard of this working before. So Cersei gets all the wildfire, puts it under the city, kills everybody. Beautiful. Perfect. Done.
Yeah, no, it's like a controlled demolition. That temple goes the fuck down.
And you lose, I mean, everybody. High Sparrow's in there. Loras is in there. Marjorie's in there. I mean, all the Tyrells are in there. Everyone's in there.
Yeah, and that moment was just so brutal and so over the top and cost so many lives that I kind of begrudgingly, like, for that moment came back around to, like, maybe not liking, but, like, respecting the depths to which Cersei went. Because, I mean, goddamn, that's that. I mean, yes, living well is the best revenge, but then dropping a temple on them is also pretty good.
I mean, it was brutal. And you know what? At that point in time, I wanted the High Sparrow to die so bad. I didn't care that everyone went with him. See you later, everybody. And then Marjorie, the best part is that Marjorie, like, figures it out when Cersei's not there. She's like, uh-oh, I know something's wrong. And High Sparrow is so self-righteous that he essentially costs everyone their lives.
Yeah. Jonathan Pryce, as the High Sparrow, moves between, like, legit piousness and, like, every once in a while kind of gives you a glimmer at the, not pride, but the, like, satisfaction he gets from his position and being able to judge and condemn. And so way, like, he's a pretty great villain because it's only subtlety in his character. And while other characters constantly call bullshit on what he's saying, and among them the Tyrell grandmother, is it Olenna. I love Olenna. That she's one of the people who, like, recognizes I can't negotiate with this man. Like, he is, you know, for all his flaws, he is devout and he is a true believer, and there is no negotiating with that. They don't seek compromise.
Right.
And so Olenna gets the fuck out of Dodge and knows better than to try and, you know, work that one out.
No, that one's, like, that's why I chose this episode, because it very much, like the Red Wedding, is just like, oh, everyone you know, goodbye now. Goodbye.
Yeah.
And even people who weren't involved. So Cersei's there. She's safe and she's fine. Her son, she made sure that he had to stay with her. And that's one of the most brutal moments, is the son falling out the window. Not falling, he jumps out the window.
Yeah.
And her son kills himself because Margaret died.
And he's also...
Oh, sorry, Marjorie. Marjorie died.
Right, it's Marjorie's death, but also, like, he had kind of been drawn into the High Sparrow's, you know,
faith
shenanigans. Bullshittery. And so, yeah, so at the same time, like, his wife is dead, his religious leader is gone, and his mother is to blame. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
You get it. I was surprised that he jumped out the window still, but I get it.
Yeah, that was brutal. And that's why I chose that episode.
Yeah, so nice collection of three to give you all a little precursor to the next season premiere coming April 14th. I'm looking forward to that. This will be the first time I'm watching Game of Thrones with the rest of the world.
Yeah, no, it's, you know what? It's actually really frustrating when you're caught up like you are and then you have to watch it every week. It's very frustrating. I'm not going to lie to you. Yeah. Get ready for it.
Wow, come to think of it, I haven't done this since Lost. Lost was one that I binged and caught up and then watched the last season as it came and got progressively angrier and angrier.
Yeah, I think we're not made anymore to watch shows one after the, like, one, then a week later watch another one, because that also is The Walking Dead, you know? You're like, I don't want to wait a week to be disappointed again. But this, I will tell you, like, I caught up a couple seasons ago and then I had to watch, I think, the last three seasons, I think I might have had to watch as they were happening, and it was very frustrating, but they were still great episodes. It was, you know, I wasn't disappointed.
Yeah, George R. Martin, his books, I mean, a feat unto themselves, but in terms of the storytelling that he has established, such a broad cast of characters who, I mean, there's enough that you love, you hate. And there's still within, like, a lot of those people you love and hate are going to die and the story is going to move on. But ultimately, we've got the story of the Stark children going back for the throne.
Right.
And I love that. Like, I didn't fully see that coming at, you know, when we started on season one. But I'm digging it. And so that'll do it for now for this episode of Thrones Talk.
This is Mindy signing off.
This is Darren. Thanks.